Of course, you start snorting it after a while. I mean, come on.
Snorting lines of Adderall. That's when you know. Happy 50th. What would you say are some of the primary issues coming from the mainstream and the academic arena of history and archaeology in relation to how they're dealing with the rise in alternative perspectives for history and the rise of alternative media, allowing these perspectives to be popularized? Because there's a lot of resistance and animosity from the scholarly halls of academia towards alternative perspectives and interpretations. So what's been your observation of how those who represent the institutional narratives of history and archaeology are dealing with the rise of alternative media and in turn alternative history?
The problem is, as I see it, it's really fundamental. They academia is, you know, science in particular. Science is, you go out of your way to remove human fallibility, human opinion, human ego, and these guys do the opposite. They and there are certain fields that are worse about it than others. It's basically the softer the science, the more room there is for you to inject your own self. So you get a lot of guys that really have their own ego wrapped up into their pet theory, and which is acceptable. I mean, expectable, I guess you'd say, but it's not acceptable because for the same reason that, you know, you go yell at me and you expect me to ball my fists, but you go yell at a cop, you expect them to practice restraint. And it's the same kind of thing. It's like, this is a job you fucking took, man. The least you can do is, like, do your job right. So if you know your ego's a problem, you should probably be checking that stuff. If you need to go to therapy or whatever, go to therapy. I don't really care. My point is if you know it's in the way, and which it clearly is with a lot of these guys, it becomes obvious when the... Look at, like, where guys like Flint Dibble ended up with, where the vast majority of the videos that he makes are hit pieces on alternate history. And it's really, most of it's well outside of his wheelhouse. And so, like, we get, for example, the Italian Cofre scan team comes out with their under the pyramid thing, and immediately Flint's laughing at it and mocking it.
An incredible thing to claim has caused a massive response from both the alternative research community and the mainstream sectors.
I would love this kind of stuff to be true, but it is total bullshit.
But then he brings in an expert in the same synthetic aperture radar, but she's a longtime critic of the stuff that the Cofre scan team's doing. And it's basically, this is like, the Cofre scan team's claiming that they made an advancement in the synthetic aperture radar technology, the means of reading it using AI. So people that are just shitting on that out of hand to me are that's stupid. That would be like me saying I can't make better videos with AI, and then people, or I can make better videos with AI, and people say no, you can't. It's ridiculous. We know, like, we're in a spot now where this is undeniable.
Like this concept that things have stopped evolving technologically, and, like, you know, why should they be able to suddenly make a breakthrough in this particular developmental field? It's like, well, because it's a developmental field and it develops, right?
That's like what you say. That's exactly right. And all science is developmental when you really get down to it. Like, you know, we know a lot about electromagnetism, a lot, and we're talking to each other right now thanks to our knowledge of it. But we have so much more to learn that billions are spent every year, not just at university level. We're at R&D and corporations trying to make the next iPhone, right? So, I mean, the idea that, but these guys treat science like it, frequently treat it like it's static. And that's not to say they don't talk about new discoveries, but it is that they make these arguments that are based on a point of, we know this for a fact already. And that's, I mean, that's one of the tells that I look for, just to be able to say, look at somebody and be able to psychologically, this person is not functioning in a scientific way right now. Well, I can tell you for a fact that blah, blah, blah. That's salesmanship, man. That's a lawyer talking to a judge. That's a cop talking, right? That's not what a scientist is. All the data currently indicates that's the way a scientist would say that. And there's a big reason, because you're hedging your bets and accepting the fact that all the data currently could indicate, but it could also be fucking wrong. It would just be wrong. And you look at where, if we took our applied knowledge of Newtonian physics and tried to bring that to a quantum scale, everything goes to shit, right? It's, we don't know everything, even when we feel like we do.
Do you think that, like, how much of the resistance within the kind of entrenched status quo comes from a genuine belief in their model being the superior model, and how much of it is actually coming from just like groupthink, and maybe personally they do think to themselves, well, actually, yeah, there are issues with the way we're looking at this, but I don't really want to say that because I know what's going to happen if I do say that, and so I'm just going to go along and kind of maintain and write about what I know and not really challenge the larger picture of this too much. How much of it is a genuine belief that they've got it really figured out and ironed out quite neatly, and how much of it is just adherence to what's been an ironed out model for a long time?
Yeah, that's a really good question, actually. I think a lot of it is they can't be wrong. They have this, the aura they project online is very much one of, they can't make mistakes. They can't be off. They're Graham Hancock will always be wrong, but these guys will never be wrong. Not when they're discussing something with Graham. So I think that's part of it is, that is a pretty good part of it. But dissecting exactly how much it is tough because sadly, with the internet, you know, like, if you're a archaeologist, like I have some archaeologists that talk to me in my inbox on that email me that don't want me to give their names out to anybody because basically they are afraid to lose their career, but they also don't like what they see. When I talked to the ice core specialist, I totally believe in man-made climate change and I don't challenge any of the models, he says, but our debunker community can be extremely overzealous sometimes. And he said, there's certain individuals that are just hell-bent on fighting that like it's a holy war instead of an academic crusade. So that I think that's some of it. But some of the guys do actually believe in their model. But when you start talking about the model thing, it falls apart so quickly when you really... So you believe that there were cavemen all over the planet, so that precludes some of these guys working copper? Because I can show you where these dudes were working at least 9,500 years ago, right? So... you know, all of a sudden that you break away. Most people don't know that. Or then you start talking about like Neanderthals having to have used boats to have settled all these islands in Java that we find them at. So they had to have used boats. So Neanderthals using boats. You don't think humans were using boats 50,000 years ago? You're fucking crazy. And so it doesn't take much to really like these models that they hold up are so outdated, really. Like a lot of them are, that's why they're constantly evolving, and there are always new ones, but the ones that they hold up to argue with usually are kind of old school. And that's why it's funny watching things like Easter Island, where all of a sudden in 1 year, DNA is just like, oh yeah, by the way, we got human and plant DNA proving that the first people that went there had visited both South America and Asia. All you debunkers that have been arguing with Thor Heyerdahl for the last 70 years, you're all fucking wrong. You're all wrong, just emotionally wrong. And that's really what it comes down to. It's just this emotional reaction that they have to... The emotional reaction to the data is extremely unscientific. That's really... Well, to answer your question from earlier more succinctly, that's probably that one sentence would probably sum it up.
Yeah, I think, I mean, obviously one of the issues dealing with like the alternative rise in looking at history from a different perspective is it is, again, like a spaghetti junction of conflicting ideas and narratives. And I think one of the issues is that you end up getting, not from everyone, but I think from quite a significant portion of the so-called mainstream or institutional narrative around history and archaeology and with other subjects as well. But speaking about this particularly, everyone gets lumped in the same kind of category when it comes to the alternative perspective, right? You're a conspiracy theorist, or you're, you know, deep into the like Tartaria, and they, you know, they lump everyone into the same fucking basket, even if we actually are looking at it from a pretty critically thinking perspective when it comes to analyzing, you know, the chronology or some of the contradictions. So if you're just focused on archaeology, if you're just focused on this one element of looking at history, you are going to ignore the things that perhaps a machining engineer or someone in quantum physics might even start recognizing, or acoustic engineering, and start saying, actually, I see signatures here of my own discipline. And I think that's very interesting, and that brings up questions. But because you're just going through this very refined wall of archaeological academia and the model that's been handed down from, you know, generation to generation, you don't have a multivariate knowledge package for the most part if you're just hyper specialized. And I think that's one of the issues as well, is like we get lumped together as all conspiracy theorists and alternative believers. And I think one of the other issues is this hyper specialization, where they're not recognizing that their own field actually does contain, you know, think of like the Neolithic stone building and the astronomical alignments. It contains packages of multi disciplines.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think that's a huge problem. There's a case of, oh, I forget her name. Jane, I was going to drive you at the wall, but I'll send it to you. But she's a Jane Stevens. She's a hairdresser. And she determined, like, for the longest time, they didn't know how the Romans did their hair. They had saw these statues, but hairdressers couldn't figure out how they did it. And she was doing research on it for a while, and she stumbled across the word. She noticed that the same word for needle and thread that the tailors were using was the same word that the hairdressers were using. And she did more research, started looking at the tools, and next thing you know, she figured out that they would have their hair sewn into place, that they would have their slaves actually stitch their hair into place. And she started recreating Roman hairstyles. And now, initially, she was met with having to jump through a bunch of bullshit hoops. Some sources said skepticism that I remember reading, but I'm having trouble finding those now, which there was a time when I would have attributed that to a stoner's memory, but nowadays I've seen how they kind of erase things and move things around and stuff. So I've started taking a lot more screenshots and saving a lot more videos, because that part of it is kind of goofy, and it makes me sound like the crazy uncle sitting at the Thanksgiving table here in the States babbling about, you know, how the Area 51 did this and they had to wear the tinfoil hats because of that. And they just, it's the TVs are watching you, but straight up, are watching you. Like, God damn it, dude. Anyway, I know these guys move stuff around. Like I know that I watched it happen with, Zahi Awas when he was on, Joe Rogan, and he didn't know about Zep Tepe. And they're...
Dude, I wanted to get into that with you. Like, what do you think about the fact that he was refusing to say that he understood what Zep... I mean, there's no way that he could not know what Zep Tepe was.
The only thing I can think of is that he must have not known what the word meant. And that's what I was trying to get from him. Because, I mean, like you say, there really is no way he could not know. The other thing is, and now this... Knowing that you ran with the UFO circles for a while, this will be preaching to your... You'll know this stuff better than me. I would not be surprised at all if this was one of those double-fisted disinformation type of things where he's just like, he's playing a villain, knowing that this is going to get him not knowing what Zep Tepe is, you know, going up and Elon Musk going up and doing it. Oh, fuck, that's going to go viral. That'll be on.
Yeah, like a kind of like a controlled opposition, or like an asset that's doing it deliberately.
Well, yeah, you drum up. You drum up a certain amount of hell. It's old school political strategy. Like here in the States, when they passed the in 1993, pretty sure it was, they passed the Firearms Act, and they put like a 30 round limit on magazines and stuff. And the NRA recognized which way the wind was blowing and knew that there was no way in hell they were going to be able to not get some serious gun control passed. So they just pushed for a 10 year limit on it, and then everybody went home. Everybody was chill. And now we can give them by 30-round magazines again. Everybody went home. That's like, you know,
different universe to us over here. It's ridiculous.
Oh yeah, sorry. Anyway, we were allowed to buy 3 butter knives.
Great. It's like okay, well, I can't even buy a fucking spork.
Well, I was gonna say, yeah, but to put it in English terms, we were allowed to have 3 butter knives at our time instead of
an American buddy of mine. Actually, the guy that I was out in Cairo with. Not Jeffrey Drum, but the dude I was out there traveling with. He told me the story of Killdozer.
Yes. Yeah. You don't have anything like that?
No, we don't really have anything like that. That was like such a crazy... I'd never heard of it before. It was like such a wild story to hear, and so typically American.
Yeah, so I shared it on Instagram a few months ago. Somebody made a... Grill dozer. It was like an iron grill that they made that was shaped like the Killdozer.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen like a lot of memorabilia. He's pretty much venerated across the free world of America, right? Like,
you're fucking Braveheart 2.0, right?
Yeah, hats off to the guy. Couldn't believe it when I saw that. Like, the fucking, like, armored tank, like, welded himself into this thing. Like, this is it. This is my swan song. I'm done. Like, I'm going out after this.
You know, when people say that they make, those time capsules, oh, we're making this to transmit a message to the future. This is not the stated goal is transmitting a message to the future. The actual reason that this is happening is I'm so important. Those people in the future need to know about me. Let's make sure they fucking do. And it's why every generation, like every generation believes that theirs is the one that's going to experience, you know, Armageddon or whatever. You always see this, but it's a egotist. We all see the world through our own eyes, and we're incapable of seeing it through anyone else's. As hard as we try, we can just try. But what you say about about how everywhere you look, we're all stressed right now. This is one of the things, like, why I get kind of skeptical about aliens. Where I get skeptical about aliens having visited Earth is, like, I have two things about it. Like, on the one hand, like, I remember having this discussion with you on the way up to Pilot Mountain. On the one hand, if aliens exist and have they exist, but if aliens exist with the ability to travel around the galaxy and to come here, I think we would be obviously of a lot of importance, because, you know, I mean, there's people here. There's intelligent life here. It's not just animals running around killing and eating each other. We're doing some art and shit down here. On the other hand, where we're at right now is so dicey that it's like, I don't know. I doubt the Vegas odds are good on us getting to any sort of, like, extra, like, light travel past the ability to touch the stars. I think that's something that we're gonna have a hard time getting through without blowing ourselves up over some tribalist bullshit. I mean, like, if you look at the difference, like, AI right now is the thing that's on everybody's mind as far as the next technological doomsday thing, and there's one big difference between AI and, like, the nuclear weapons, besides the fact that, you know, the guys that built the bomb were immediately recognized. Oh, fuck me. I've become the destroyer of worlds. But they had to go through a government to release that thing. Like, they want to put that on the planet. They have to go through a government and build this multi-million-dollar thing and have it fucking delivered. But what somebody want to do? If some dude works on AI and he wants to unleash some hostile AI on the world, what's he got to do? Press that button and fucking release that thing on the internet, and fucking, yeah, in a matter of seconds, the world's changed.
That's one of the concerns that I have, definitely, rogue AI and where that's going to go in the future. And when it comes to the non-human and alien intervention conversation, I mean, it's a weird one, man. I actually think it probably is far stranger than aliens from other worlds visiting us. I think there is an other that has been interfacing with us throughout history, throughout time, giving birth to various mythologies and mystic practices. And I mean, I've had my own experiences with things that are just beyond the veil of what I would consider to be anything normal, which actually took me down the pathway of becoming a researcher and a podcaster in general, was having my own strange experiences. So I think that there is something that has been following us through time. I'm also not against the idea that perhaps there are subterranean intelligences that are actually on this planet.
I'm not opposed to any of those things. I think it gets tricky because there are certain places like the dark side of the moon or even deep in the Earth's crust where you kind of just have to take what people's words are for granted. You know, I don't know anybody who has worked as a deep sea diver. I don't know anybody who's, you know, been to the bottom of the Marianas Trench. So when they start telling me what is at the bottom of the Marianas Trench, I'm just kind of stuck with believing what the scientists say. There's certain things, on the other hand, where, you know, like I'm doing research right now, and it's hilarious. It's like there's this hill that was the Native Americans buried people on over here. And anyway, it got blown up by the white people in like 1920s. And the geologists all say that this thing was made out of like multiple layers. The ground, the two converging rivers swirled to make this conical mound of fucking sandstone, basically, right? And you look at that, there's one picture of it, and it's like clearly basalt pillars, like clearly pillars of basalt. It's like, that ain't fucking, what are you even on about? Like, you're talking about, what the fuck you mean this is sandstone? I'm not a geologist, but I know what basalt looks like compared to fucking sandstone. I mean, it looks more akin to something you'd see in Namadal. And it's just interesting because this is something, like, I can't fly to the dark side of the moon, but I can look around here and see where a lot of times things are just like this. You guys are either, there's one of two things. Either the researcher doesn't do proper research or they're knowingly full of shit. And I mean, I've seen it with, there's a paper, I forget the paper, I had to pull it up, but there's a paper that's like, it's from the 1980s, 1990s, and it's about the squaring of the Great Pyramid and how they laid out the foundations. And it's hilarious because the guy talks about them measuring across the center. And in the center of the Great Pyramid is like a 3-meter fucking mound of bedrock that they left. So you can't measure across the center. You have to be up on ladders to measure across. So it precludes that as a means of doing it. So yeah, it was just like, right. It just shows that, like, again, either poor research or just bullshit. So, you know, there's, and here's the thing with like the difference. I should probably say this because it's important, because people say you're anti-scientific, and there's a huge difference between a hard science and a soft science. And the difference is they actually get tested. They actually go through the funnel of the universe touching the thing. And if you start doing a double blind experiment and you're separating, looking at the difference between packets that are particles or that are fucking waves and all this crazy physics bullshit, this is demonstrable. You can argue about the reasons why all you want, but you can't argue that it happens. And you can write a paper that ignores that, and it's going to be proven wrong. But archaeology doesn't have that kind of shit going on, by and large. You can posit that I could say that the pronunciations of ancient Egyptians were all wrong, and that when the Greeks translated the Egyptian words, that they did this, that, the other thing, and you'll never prove me wrong. And my hypothesis can stand alone all on its own little hill. And until we invent time travel and go hear what ancient Egyptians spoke like, nobody can prove me wrong. So archaeology, like calling it a science, is, it's informed by science, but, you know, it's like quite often very unscientific.
Yeah, it is essentially storytelling at its most basic fundamental level.
Yes, you're exactly right there. And then things have to fit within the framework of the story.
And then, of course, we, you know, have real issues where things like, you know, the Spanish conquistadors go over to Peru and they attribute sites to, you know, for example, the Inca, that are very questionable. And then you find that the Andean shaman traditions say, well, actually, that goes a lot further back than the Inca. But we go, oh, no, you can't say that. Indigenous people of this culture that we're talking about. And then if Graham Hancock goes out there, we'll call him a racist. For paying attention to the indigenous culture story, because it's not racist to go over there and assign a narrative and come back and teach your children that. It's racist to pay attention to their story.
It's insane. What's funny is they call it racist, it's like the indigenous people are clearly offended by their. I mean, like I did a study on my video on the Rutz Clovis and the East Wenatchee Clovis site. This Clovis site, like in 1989, the newspaper records the arguments between the archaeologist and the Native American spokesman, like this, the shaman, I think, of the tribe, or whatever, the medicine man, whatever they were calling him. But the you know, the American dude, the archaeologist, he's like, yeah, we just need to build this like museum here. We need to like show people all this site and all this cool stuff. There's a lot to learn there. We can learn about the origins and the peopling of the Americas. And then the Indians, like, look, man, I don't need all this fucking bullshit science coming and telling me where I came from. Our religion says that we came out of caves in the fucking ground. I don't need you to tell me otherwise. Go fuck yourself, basically. And so it's pretty, I mean, you know, it wasn't that blunt, but it was, that's basically what he said. It was just basically like, get fucked. And you talk to some of the Indians around here, and they're quick to tell you that they don't believe that a lot of them say that they don't even tell you the story, that they don't tell white people their actual story that being born from caves is the honky version of this story. That
I mean,
got their own
I mean, why would you tell us?
Well, that, there's it's one of the things when people talk
after all of our history, you'd kind of just
fuck you.
Think,
it's
fuck
fine.
That.
Yeah, why I understand. I understand why the natives here. It's one thing I'm sure you don't deal with over in England, but like the Native Americans here, especially on the part of the country I live in, they have a lot of sway. They have a lot of money. They have a lot of power, they can, like, we have NAGPRA, the Native American Graves Repatriation Act, and Graves Protection and Repatriation Act, and they this allows them a lot of power. And so there's a lot of archaeologists and a lot of amateur people that are very opposed to NAGPRA, and I get it. For example, there's a really cool elongated skull from right up here in my neck of the woods. It got repatriated to the tribes, and they buried it in an unknown location. And, you know, it sucks that the best I can do is some pictures from the Smithsonian from the 60s. But can you blame the people? They basically live in an occupied country. You know, it's like the fifth generation or whatever, depending on where you're at, of people that have been occupied. You can't expect the little bit that we have left, we're going to hold on to a tooth and nail, fuck you. And I can't blame them for that. I mean, fuck, you know, even if it does get in the way, like Kennewick Man's a great example, is like the 9,000+ year old remains that they found in Kennewick, Washington, just a couple hours drive from here. And yeah, that sparked a big old mess because the archaeologists all wanted to take DNA samples and then all do all this stuff. And the natives, they don't call him Kennewick Man. They call him the Ancient One. He's one of theirs. That's as far as they're concerned. And at 9,000 years, I do think it gets to get to be kind of that's a pretty tenuous.
Kind of like, come on, guys. Like, we found it.
Yeah, well, it's 9,000 years, man. I mean, come on. If we go to England and start digging around 9,000 years, are we digging up the same people that we dig up today? No, man, there's been just in the last 1,000 years, you got the fucking Normans and the Vikings and fucking
oh my god, so many, like, yeah, we are crisscrossed with all sorts of invasions conquests. And
yeah, and I would dare say that's most of the world, you know.
Yeah. I mean, a fascinating place for that is Malta, where I came back from not too long ago. And, you know, one of the largest concentrations of megalithic sites in the world on Malta, and a real mystery, because I think when the settlers in the Bronze Age were coming over from places like Sicily and they arrived in Malta, they arrived to find all of these megalithic sites that were already constructed with no people really on the island whatsoever. There's no real understanding of where they came from. I find it fascinating, like the Stone Age. I mean, what do you think about it? Because it's something that I've started talking about recently, in terms of, I think our perception of what the Stone Age is extremely wrong. But I'd be interested to know what you think about how we look at the Stone Age, the Neolithic Age, what it might actually represent.
Well, I'll give a little spoiler for a future video of mine that I'm working on now. You ever heard much about the Great Lakes copper culture? There was, okay, and this is exactly what you're talking about. Here in the States, there was, in the Great Lakes, for whatever reason, there were such huge chunks of copper that were just left in the ground. Some of them as big as cars, right? And they find a couple of them still in the lakes, is how they know what, but these things were massive. And so there's a bunch of copper artifacts that were built near Lake Superior in particular. There's a bunch of copper that were made without smelting. They would just heat it up and hammer it into place. They didn't, it was almost pure copper as they found it. There's mines that they had. There was mine. Okay, here's the big one, Jay. There's at least one in the record, like 3 foot long, fucking copper machete, copper sword. Now, imagine some dude running around with the fucking copper sword dressed in fucking cave skins. This doesn't sound like, this sounds like something from Conan the Barbarian. It doesn't sound like any historical documentary. We do look at history wrong, and that's a lot of that's because, like, what I'm telling you right now isn't well known. A lot of people know about it, but, like, to me, the implications of this is huge, because not only in this area do we see it rise and we see it fall, but they were still using copper all the way up until they had copper needles being used still when the first white people showed up in the area. They still were sewing their clothes with copper needles, but they were recycling goods at that point. So a lot of things we're going to miss. The bigger things are going to be gone because they're going to have been recycled into something else. But we do know that they use so much of it that they had 50-foot deep mines and shit when they were down there pounding on it with hammer stones and shit, looking for big chunks of copper that they could just beat into what they wanted. It was crazy.
How far back are we saying this?
The first metal working on the planet that we know of, 9,500 years ago, fucking like right after all the shit went down, as far as like, you know, 1,000 years later or whatever. And 1,000 years before you see it starting over in the old world. It's about 1,000 years later that you see the first stuff starting. I believe it was over in Sardinia that you see the first of it. But the implications of this is that, you know, you go searching for things, and if you walk onto a diamond field, the first guy there just walks around and picks them up right off the ground. You know, the 50th guy there has to dig in the ground to get the diamonds out. It's not hard to imagine that there were places on this earth that had similar copper veins, similar iron veins, all kinds of shit like this all over the place. And, these guys, they got to the point where it was too hard to extract the copper out of the ground, and so they quit mining it, and they just passed along. And so then 10 generations later, wouldn't they remember that as the people that had some sort of access to ancient technology or something? These guys could pull this right out of the dirt. I have to steal yours and beat it into shape. I think that our look at history, the same with boats. We don't look at people like you talk to people were sailing between Europe and America, well further back into the past than we ever give them credit for. And they're like, oh, that's ridiculous. That's a bunch of bullshit. Where's your evidence for that? Well, people on both sides of the continent and fucking DNA now. Thank you very much. But, I mean, that's common sense, for fuck's sake. Shit, we're talking about the same humans that we have now. You're going to tell me that it took until 1400s till people were like, got the balls to fucking try to cross the sea?
I mean, we're getting to a point where the, like, you know, anatomically modern human is being pushed back almost to 800,000 years potentially. So, I mean, there's a huge expanse of time, and also corridors of like relative stability climate wise, not globally, but certain key areas of the world throughout that period of extremely long amount of time have had, relative stability enough to flourish to some degree and then vanish if there was some form of cataclysmic event.
Yeah, exactly right. And then we have places that pop up like where Egypt is all just nestled in, like when it pops up into history, it's like all squished into the one good area in the region. It's like all the rest of the areas were, why the fuck did you guys like all smash yourselves into this spot instead of like, where'd you all come from? I guess is the big question. How did so many people end up over here with all this stuff? And it's, there's so many little things like that. Graham Langdon, he wrote the book, the mystery of the naval holding statues, I think it's called, and it's a really good book. He was at the Cosmic Summit selling the book there. Yep. Bingo. Yeah, there you go. Yeah, that's a fucking a perfect.
I need to get him on for an interview, Graham. If you're listening to this, I do have every intention of getting you on. I'm just fucking backlogged and have ADHD. I'm sorry.
I had him on close to a year ago now, I think, but I had him on and it was great. He's awesome, and yeah, that book exactly, and it's very simple. It's like he doesn't need to take it anywhere too crazy to make it intriguing, and I think that's what honestly. Makes it so awesome is that it's like here's this interesting piece of evidence that doesn't seem to coincide with the mainstream narrative.
Just a few examples for people. So he's been doing a lot of work around the world looking at these various statues, which all seem to symbolize the same thing of an individual holding their navel. And I mean, this book's like pages and pages and pages of these, various examples across the world of the same symbol, the same style. And I think it may speak to.
Just make sure it doesn't fall over.
It may speak to like a fertility civilization, one that venerate, like, you know, the holding the womb. And you look at a lot of these, you know, earlier Neolithic cultures, or at least, you know, structures, there seems to be a lot of veneration of connection to nature, of the goddess, of the mother, of being reborn through the womb, of these megalithic complexes, a lot of like goddess and nature goddess in the ancient pagan world. And so maybe this is representative of something that was more of a goddess-style culture that was globally distributed, it would seem.
Yeah, it's there's a lot of different ideas about it. It definitely seems like it was a global idea that was spread. One of the things that makes me laugh about it is, like, or that what I thought about it made me chuckle, and me and Graham had a good little chuckle about it, but we got some of those ones in the, like Karan Tepe, where they're holding their junk, man. They're not holding their stomach. They fucking dude. He's got his hands on his cock.
Yeah,
you just proud. Or the other ones are, and the other ones, most of the other ones that we see are holding their stomach. It's like, I mean, what? There was a time when humans were fighting to survive, and as Graham points out, when you see these things pop up on the record, it usually corresponds with metallurgy and or freaking agriculture. So it shows up with the means of becoming better. We have better tools and we have easier food sources. And so all of a sudden you get all this leisure time, and then your full bellies and fucking becomes part of the thing, right? It's like, you look, we got big fat ladies and we've got like tons of food and we hold our cocks and we hold our guts and
just kind of like, you know, showing off about it. The rest of you got a scrape to survive and here we are. We're good.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I'm not worried if I break my leg fucking. Somebody else will bring me food from the garden out back. Life's good. So, and as a matter of fact, we'll use a metal splint to keep my foot together. Yeah, the world's, the world's definitely, it's hard to say for sure what these symbols meant, but the world was definitely a lot different historically than what we're taught. There's really no question about that. And a lot of that's due to the specialization that these guys have. You know, it's like keeping up on the latest things is hard for even a content creator who makes money off of paying attention to the latest news. And it can be just like overwhelming when you've got life going on and your own personal passions and all this other stuff. Imagine being like intently focused on the fucking genetic aspects of the fucking Sri Lankan tree frog, and so you're fucking studying the piss out of that, and it's like you might miss when something else is found, when this other tree frog half the world away, even though it's right up your alley and you love it, you're just, your head's in the sand, and so you walk around 20 years later saying the wrong thing to your students until one of them pulls up it on Google and says you're wrong.
Jackass. That
takes one with balls.
We don't speak in definitives here, obviously, because it's all guesswork and hypothesis. But what's your highest quality scenario for the real chronology of human history and human development? Have you given it much thought in terms of like what the real origin point could be, how far back it really goes, what some of the like big points in our history might actually have represented?
The earliest iron working we see is in Anatolia, and it's disconnected from the earliest iron working that we see that we consider part of the Iron Age. It's not the same people. It just seems to have kind of piddled out. And then you think about guys like Einstein or Hawking that really single-handedly are capable of like seeing things differently, and without them you go back in history and you get fucking all these mathematicians and shit in ancient Greece and Rome that were basically in the same boat, that without them they wouldn't have had X, Y, or Z. And I'm of the opinion that we've probably had so many cultures that were quote-unquote advanced, and that because, you know, here it's kind of a hustle if you think about it, like in a hunter-gatherer society or an early society that's early farming society, it's a hustle to be able to read the stars. Okay, you're if you're able to read the stars and use that to inform your tribe of where to go to hunt and how to plant your crops, very quickly you sitting on your ass becomes worth way more than you working in the fields. However, you really only need to sit on your ass a couple of hours a month in order to pull this off.
No. He had to focus every day on this, every day on this, you know what I mean? And have lots of food brought to him, and the women needed to rub his feet whilst he looked at the stars. He did
He was crushing it.
And so he teaches it to only his kids and all this kind of shit. But eventually, you know, if this person dies without ever passing it on, then this knowledge is lost. And, you know, and that would go out well outside of just astronomy. This could go with the guy who figured out how to extract metal from the ore, right? That could have happened 100 times, but it happened on such a small level that it was just this one little tribe in this one little area, and they never got past the early stages. The early metal working in Anatolia is that way. It's shit. It's real, like, it's extremely varied in quality. Some of it's really good, some of it's really bad. It's very obvious that they just grabbed the ore, heated it up with whatever fire they had, started hitting it with whatever they had, and if there was a lot of carbon in the fire, they might get something better, and if there's a lot of impurities in the metal, they're going to get something worse, and that's really all it was to it. So, the same with math and all that kind of stuff, right? It's like one dude could figure something out that allows them to use a concave mirror to do all kinds of goofy shit, and then a generation later, it's lost, especially if you can imagine, again, this takes some speculation, but it also knowledge of human psychology. It's like you can imagine that dude sitting on his ass all the time, and the one Grok is sitting over there watching him going, that motherfucker looks awfully lazy to me. And he starts paying attention. He realizes this dude's really only working one night a month, and the rest of the time he's just sitting over there smoking weed. And he goes and fucking busts dude's head open and fucking, fuck this. This guy doesn't do anything anyway. It was all lazy work. And, it doesn't take long to imagine these being snuffed out by their own people.
Absolutely.
You know, it's...
Absolutely. You know, fucking academics in tribal hunter-gatherer communities. Don't eat them. Don't eat them. Yeah, no, I've put that out there about Göbekli Tepe. Just the idea that if it was purposefully buried, perhaps it wasn't the builders of Göbekli Tepe that buried that, but perhaps it was the hunter-gatherers around that area that buried that. Maybe they killed these people because they realized in their own kind of, you know, tribal and relatively superstitious belief systems that the gods had punished this entire world for the incredible civilizations and, you know, technologies that were coming out of this potential advanced civilization prior to the Younger Dryas. And you know, if you were survivors of a more high technology to a certain degree civilization, and you were scholars and academics, and your world collapsed, of course you would seek out the hunter-gatherers, would seek out the preppers, people that were ready, right, you know, and like try and offer some form of a skill. And maybe that form of a skill was the construction of Göbekli Tepe. Like, oh, hey, well, we can do this for you and we can teach you about this stuff. And then maybe some chieftain turns around and goes, these are the guys that brought all of this shit down on us. Screw them. Kill them. Bury it. Yeah. We don't need this. Move on. You know, just an idea.
Yeah. No, you could be absolutely right. And even like even more than just a chieftain, it would be just an idea. We're in the speculation land, but it wouldn't take a lot. Like, say there was a tribe, like there was a bunch of hunter-gatherers that camped out around these Göbekli Tepe for 1,000 years. And then at some point, one got that, an up-and-coming dude that's trying to challenge the chief uses this as a point of political power or, you know, point of to motivate people. I mean, we could get rid of these cocksuckers before they bring hell back down on us. Aren't they down there drawing pictures of the end of the world on their rocks? Well, fucking, we don't need that.
These guys got to go. They got to go. We can't have it. Well, you know, I think superstition and the destruction of information over time has been one of the biggest, tragedies of trying to piece together this puzzle of the human story. I mean, you know, you think of things like, again, of course, the burning of the Library of Alexandria, but that's one case. There are a lot of burning of Library of Alexandria level events that have taken place all over the world, and you know, from especially in China, where they just had to like erase their history each time there was an invasion from another emperor. They would essentially just destroy all the monks, all the temples, all of the sacred relics and artifacts, and this is something that we do cyclically throughout history. And it becomes a real problem when we're trying to figure it out, coming back to that whole perception of archaeology essentially as storytelling, which it is.
The funny thing about it is history, like up until more recent times, history, you know, Herodotus is credited with being the beginning of it, but even he was not perfect with it. But up until then, history was purely a tool. You know, this is why they would say that the Keynes lists were like questionable, because they would, I mean, you just, nobody's been around the last time the Keynes was inaugurated. So they don't, it's not like they remember. They sure as fuck didn't write it down. They know these guys are all fucking illiterate. So we just fudge this shit because this guy needs to be begat by so-and-so. So we'll fucking change it every year. And this still happens now. I mean, in the World War II, there were battles that the Japanese, the Germans, the French, the Americans, and the British that I know of were found to have fudged data mostly on aircraft and tank losses, because these were expensive and they could cost a man his job. So especially the Japanese, because they got like that, they call it the, I think, Mariana Turkey shoot, when there was like 142 Japanese planes or something like that shot down in one day. And yeah, that got heavily underreported. They spread that out over the course of a couple of weeks, because it didn't want to look like we got, but yeah, I mean, so you read these records and it's, you know, it's always difficult. And then like they burn, you know, we know of like unit 132 or some shit, the Japanese, it was that their medical experiments and shit. And, we know of that.
Did you ever see the film, The Men Behind the Sun?
Yes, Jesus Christ, man. That's one of those movies that you're like, did you actually...
I'm pretty sure. I think it's one of those movies that's on, like, banned in multiple countries lists, that as a teenager, me and my friend were like, oh my God, let's watch that. And we were just like, holy shit.
Yeah, the arm scene was just like...
The arm scene and, like, the giant microwave and shit. Like, you know, And the thing is, I think it's the realization that this was done. This was happening.
This was, you know, real. Yeah, they recorded them as logs in the book. They didn't call them humans. They were called logs.
Jesus, man. Like, that, yeah. Some of the things we're capable of are truly just, like, astounding.
It all comes down to tribalism. And this is one of the things I preach about this one a lot in my personal life. I talk about it a little bit online, but, like, people that consider themselves anti-racist or anti-whatever sort of tribalist thing, you don't just, like, get to say, I've decided I'm no longer going to look at gay people differently. I'm going to change my ways. The thing is that human beings inherently other, just like to dogs, it's dogs versus the world, except for the other animals that are in my immediate circle. But if we're walking down the street, I'm not going to communicate with another human or another cat the same as another dog. These are my tribe. And humans other each other to the point of, to take it to the nth degree, you go down to tribal places and they tattoo each other differently with tribal scars and shit to separate people so they can't infiltrate from one tribe to the next. Even though genetically they're identical, they're racist as fuck, because it's not about race, it's about othering. And when you other somebody, when you sufficiently place them in the category of being othered, it's okay to do whatever. Insert sin here, docs, kill, whatever, right? That they no longer deserve the same level of respect. And so you have to constantly kind of check that like every time you talk to somebody that your mind is capable of othering, you kind of have to remember that just be aware that your brain's going to go down different paths here, and that some of them aren't where you necessarily want to go. And this is biology, man. You can deny it all you want, but fucking this is what it is. And so, like, so right now we got it, it's the tribalism thing is to the nth degree thanks to the internet.
Yes, yeah, I was about to say, I mean, you know, this developed as an evolutionary survival mechanism for protecting your little enclave of humans that are developing, and that has now, you know, catalyzed into not necessarily like a redundant bit of programming, but it's become co-opted by, like you said, like this hyper echo chamber digital landscape that is constantly saturating you with information and trying to push you into a certain kind of like character, like little corridor of ideology. And, you know, we're not wired for this, man. Like, even though, you know, we're modern, we're living in the modern world, we've grown up in this society, when you actually think of humans as a human being and you take us back all the way through history, you think of like how long we've really been exposed to this level of information download about the entire world. At one point, And for most of history, we were in a little town, a little tribe, a little village. And that's all we really had is the sensory input and what we knew about the world. And now you have access to everything. And like you said, the social engineering of it towards tribalism, it's weaponizing that evolutionary survival trait within humans, that necessary piece of psychology that does keep you safe in certain situations, has been drastically expanded and weaponized.
Oh, to the point where you see people afraid to say anything. Like The Rock is probably the most notorious example of that, where it's like you couldn't get him to tell you what was his favorite flavor of Pop Tarts nowadays. He's afraid he's going to offend somebody. He can, oh man,
dude, that guy's a
I love them all, but it's the fear of, you know, the fear of being destroyed or eaten by your own. And that goes both ways. I mean, like, you see it with you see it on the right and you see it on the left, where they use people and then destroy them later on down the road. Who's the one guy? Milo
Yiannopoulos. Yiannopoulos. Yeah.
Well, he was a right-wing talking head up until Trump got elected. And then they were like, oh, yeah, do you remember what he said on a podcast like a year and a half ago? Yeah, we're going to use that and destroy the man now. And then it did. I mean, the next thing you know, he was... I used to see him everywhere, no matter I wanted to or not. And now I have to look for him if I want to find him now. And I don't, so I never see him. I saw him as a producer on something. Like, there was a bunch of shit going on, and a bunch of different people that were like, and he was a producer. It was like a bunch of people that used to be bigger on the internet and now weren't. But, like, I mean, his deal, if you remember, it was a kind of a big deal. Like, he talked about being at parties in with Catholic priests and underage boys and the actors, and they were like, he's like, so are you going to turn anybody? Oh, no, I'm not going to give any names, blah, blah, blah. Was that on Joe Rogan even? Fuck, I think that might have been.
He had Milo on at least twice, I think.
Fuck, that was a long-ass time ago. God damn.
Yeah, I know. So much changes. So much happened since, like, you know, in literally just, like, 5 years. It's incredible.
Oh, man. And then you think about, like, I mean, it was, like, 2015, 2016, when politics started getting, like, really fucking, maybe 2014. But, like, 2010, I guess you could see it, like, in the darker corners of the internet, the atheism wars, as I always call them. You saw those start to deteriorate.
Well, that's it. It's such a fast changing dynamic space online as well, and with the alternative space as well. It's difficult because there's a lot of different narratives. What do you make of the whole Tartaria thing? Because I've kind of said that this is a bit of a psyop. I feel like it's been pushed out there as a way to ridicule alternative perspectives in general.
I mean, I don't know where it came from. I wouldn't be surprised at all if it's a psyop, but I have referred to Tartaria, and I'll die on this hill. Tartaria is just an Eastern European version of We Was Kangs. When you get all that, like, fucking black people were samurais, black people were Native Americans, black people were Greeks, black people were Romans. This is the same fucking thing. White people were Native Americans, white people were samurai, white people were black people. Hey, anything cool that happened, it was us. That's same fucking thing, man. It tickles the fancy of people that are inherently into... I'm not saying everybody believes in this shit's racist, but it definitely is created to tickle the fancy of people that are into racial superiority, because it plays right. I mean, when you start saying that, to revert it to the We Was Kang thing, when you start saying that black people did all the cool stuff in the world, you're definitely going to cater to black people. That's not, you know, that's a no-brainer. Everybody wants to be told they're the best. And so, yeah, I think the mud flood thing is probably my favorite thing to laugh at, because I worked in construction a long time, and yeah, there's always like dirt lines on foundations, because like dirt settles, and like, you know, they put topsoil down and it rains, and it's crazy. But yeah, the world changes.
Dude, what I love the most about them is like I'm sure you've come across them. It's like the hallmark of the whole conspiracy of the Tartaria is these black and white videos that you'll see on X with, like, you know, the old World Fair or something like this, and like some Greek buildings, and they'll just be like this deep voice going like, Tartaria was around 200 years ago. It was a free energy society. It was wiped out by a mud flood. And everyone's passing around the same like narrated voiceover fucking clips that aren't even related, because it's just like, you know, black and white footage that looks interesting. And this is the thing, is like that clickbait alternative history is a real problem as well, I would say. You know, people accuse me of being clickbaity, and I think that's unfair, because you do have to operate in the online space of trying to get people's attention. So you do need to have attention grabbing headlines or, you know, thumbnails. But as long as you're actually doing research and bringing a opinion that is at least in your mind educated from the research you've been doing, and it's not something where you're trying to take advantage of anyone because you're just trying to present your perception, I think that's fine. But there is a real issue with clickbait, just trying to create a cottage industry out of challenging the mainstream. I can understand why the mainstream gets so frustrated with the alternative space. It's not that I don't see the issue with, like, everyone having the opinion and everyone going on podcasts and saying this is how it went and this is how it went, because they contradict each other. But I think that there is also a lot more going on in the alternative media space than the mainstream in relation to data collection and looking outside of the box.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll start backwards. The VaceScan project, and I mean, Carly, I forget his last name, but I'm sorry, Carly, you're an awesome dude, and I have a ton of respect for you, bud. He took his shit to the fucking, to the Cairo Museum. He was scanning vases there. He's like, hey, you guys want to cry about provenance? Huh? I'll just go ask these cocksuckers and scan their vases. And so, on the one hand, we have, you know, the academics saying there's nothing to see here. On the other hand, we have the alternate history people not just saying there's something to see here, but collecting the data. And so this is the kind of thing that, you know, we see this a lot, actually. Like, probably the best example of how the two working together, the alternate history and the mainstream academia, you know, the both times that the Giza Plateau has been carbon dated, it was financed by woo peddlers, right? The first time was the fucking Edgar Cayce Foundation.
Edgar Cayce, right? Foundation, which originally funded Zahi Hawass, if I'm correct.
And Mark Lehner, which is Mark Lehner is basically Zahi Hawass's American buddy, right? When they did it the second time, it was the David Koch Foundation that financed it. Same kind of thing. He's looking for old dates. He's looking for, you know, 10,000-year-old pyramids or whatnot. So it's, you know, this is, of course, that's where the curiosity is going to lead to searching for things. And the people that have got more of a vested interest, which is weird that they get such a vested interest in saying there's nothing there, but it does seem to be that way. The opposition to digging at Göbekli Tepe is a stark example of that. I mean, well, considering the iconography, every fucking pillar we pop up has different fucking icons on it. We're looking at it going, this could be some sort of proto language. Even from a mainstream historical perspective, this could be worth digging up just to like see what maybe these morphed into fucking hieroglyphs 1,000 or 10,000 years later or whatever. This is worth looking into. And instead, they're just like, yeah, I don't know, man. I think we dug up enough. It's like, Jesus Christ. But it does get to be where I can understand where there's an opposition, because there's definitely a cottage industry of people that throw bullshit into it, especially because of the amount of spiritualism that gets involved, which I don't have a problem. I don't have a problem with spiritualism, but it's very easy to fake a feeling. It's very easy to manipulate somebody with words and with deeds and just subtle ways of interacting, especially in person. But even on the internet, you can put on that shuck and jive, buddy. But in person, you can really fucking manipulate somebody. So you get these people that there's some really, really goofy things that are clearly bullshit that almost nobody could believe. There's other things where you look at it and you're just like, God damn, this guy's got to be half a bubble off. There's definitely especially the AI generated voices with like the Tartaria thing, like you're talking about. You get it's just kind of like low level. We have high levels of technology found under ancient Giza structures, and it's just like a bunch of bullshit.
But they're the ones that have got 25k likes, 22k reposts, like, you know, 5 million views. It's like, this isn't good.
No, it's horrible.
And I can understand the frustration from the mainstream, but they have to understand that we're also frustrated with this alternative bullshit.
Yep, and they're the mainstream really, really fucks the whole thing up when they lump us all together, because anybody on the outside can see that we're not in the same boat, but they'll put us all. I mean, they put us all together big time. I'm about to make a response video. You know who Stefan Milo is?
I was going to say, what's popping off with this, like, Stefan Milo's thing? What's happening here?
Oh, he made a video. Like, when I was in Sedona with Graham Hancock, I was on stage with him for a little bit. And Graham, that...
Yeah, you did great, by the way. Really enjoyed that.
Oh, well, thanks, Jay. I appreciate that, man. The Stefan did a response video to what Graham said in that. And I watched about half of it and decided that I needed to respond because I like Stefan's content. I've been watching him before I was making YouTube videos. Actually, my first video, he's one of the people I comment on, and I actually make like references to his old content and stuff. And every time he weighs in on Graham or this alternate history stuff, he's just disingenuous and he's not a good debunker. We'll just put it that way. He's great at talking about Neanderthals and cool shit. He's not very good when he gets into like his arguing, and he's very, I hate to say disingenuous because I don't think he's dishonest, but it's like, for example, he'll hold, I bought this book from Graham so that I could do research, and it's the Mars mystery. It's like, if you didn't get fingerprints of the gods, you didn't get, you know, the sign and the seal, you didn't get Heaven's Mirror, you got the fucking goofy book that's dated. That if you were around back then, you would have been pretty young, but like, I was in my 20s, and let's put it this way. In a YouTube sphere, if the Mars face just hit today, every swinging dick in this community would be making a video on it, because not doing that would just be leaving money on the table, and we would all have opinions on it because it was fucking viral. And of course, Graham's going to write a book about it. But anyway, point is, Stefan's, he's that kind of guy. He's just disingenuous. And yeah, his thing with Graham,
cherry picking for his own perspective.
Oh yeah. And Graham is talking on this video about how like seems to be an organized opposition to his perspective. And he talks about how CIA created the term conspiracy theory, which is true. I mean, that's not a hot take any more than fucking the Ultra shit. MK Ultra is a hot take. You know, this is real shit. So, the thing is that these guys, like, anyway, his video, he's basically putting it all into one camp and making fun of how Graham is arguing about how, you know, saying that this is, that we have a problem here. It's there is no bad actors basically in the debunker community as far as he's concerned and all this. So yeah, it's kind of stupid. And but since I was in that video, I and not only that, but it's the kind of thing that I usually, when any of these guys, these bigger boys, come out and yell about Graham, I usually try to make.
Well, you know, it's the purest attitude that annoys me, because I can sit here and so can you, and we can go, man, there are some fucking crazy people in the alternative space, and there's a lot of people who I think are wrong, and I, you know, but everyone in the debunker community is so pure. And you know, there's no one out there with an agenda that's skewed by bias, that's not actually looking at the data, but is responding with a knee-jerk reaction. No, that doesn't happen. That, like, it's like, guys, like, we know it happens on our side. Just fucking admit it happens on your side.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think that that's a psychological thing with them that is, there's a term in the gaming world called glass cannon, and if you're a tabletop game, it's a piece that has very low health, but if it shoots you, you're going to be sorry that you got hit. It'll fuck your world up, but it's also made of glass. So that's kind of the way I view their shtick, is it's all about, we're perfect. We know this material. We know this stuff. We don't make mistakes. These guys are a bunch of fucking boneheads off running amok, and they're just talking shenanigans over here. Us, on the other hand, are well-informed. We're grounded. We cross-reference. We do our research. We don't make those kinds of mistakes. And for whatever reason, I've noticed this kind of attitude in a lot of people in the internet days, ever since social media came a thing, especially, where people are like, I don't want to make typos. I don't want to ever say anything wrong on the internet, because it's always there. It seems like this is just nagging at the back of a lot of people's brains. And we see this a lot in that community, where when the Göbekli Tepe trees is probably the most recent and stark example. They were all saying, oh yeah, it was erosion control. This is a good thing. We're glad we got those trees. And then it's like, well, no, it wasn't erosion control, but it's a good thing. Those trees are fine. They're being monitored. And then they're being removed. And it's like, oh, we've been talking about removing those for years.
And you've been calling us, you know, crazy pseudoscientists and conspiracy theorists for thinking it's problematic.
Exactly. And The irony here is where it gets just fucking over the top to me. It's like, you're in a debate. These guys are arguing with the people that a large number of people think you guys are flat out fucking lying about history. You're flat out fucking lying about it. And so then when you're proven wrong, you just rewrite things? You just fucking lie in real time, right in front of the people that accuse you of lying about history? It's just bold move, Cotton. I don't know what else to say. It's fucking, what the fuck is wrong with you guys? It's the same thing with the, I told Flint Dibble the same thing back when me and him still talked about the racism thing. When the Society for American Archaeology letter has an open lie in it saying that this theory dates back to Ignatius Donnelly, and it dates to before Ignatius Donnelly. And when I pointed that out to Flint, he's like, it doesn't really matter. And I'm like, you do realize that this makes the statement archaeologists are lying to you about Atlantis factually correct. Literally, you're lying about the origins of Atlantis hunting. And I can say archaeologists are lying about Atlantis, and this is a real statement now. And you're enabling that. You know that, right? I mean, what the fuck is wrong with you? This is why academics were fucking kept under lock and key back in the old school legacy media days. We saw Carl Sagan, unless he turned on PBS at fucking 2 o'clock in the morning.
You get a little bit too much exposure to these guys. You start going, hang on a second. Are you actually as brilliant as I'm being told? I'm having doubts.
Yeah.
Like, you know, that's how I felt about people like Neil deGrasse Tyson. You know, you get raised on these guys, and then you kind of realize, oh, fucking hell, he's just an arrogant douchebag, really. He hasn't got anything going. And, you know, Carl Sagan's actually really interesting, because Carl Sagan was, like, super into ufology. He was really into that whole subject. And then, like, suddenly, like, he completely flipped on that, partly through his career. And it's, like, a weird parallel between Carl Sagan and like the kind of UFO subject and Zahi Hawass and Egyptology. Like, why do you think? Good. Well, yeah, because it's kind of interesting how I think it was Trevor Grassi that brought up this quote from Zahi Hawass back in like 92 at a university alumni speech or something in Cairo, where he said something along the lines of, there are passageways going under the Sphinx that lead to the pyramid, and if we explore these, we will find out more about who the true builders of the pyramids really were. Like a very kind of esoteric and, like, you know, antediluvian, you could almost say, quote about what these pyramids are. And then by 1993-94, it completely changed the tune and hasn't changed it ever since. So it's like, what exactly happened there? And it was like a similar thing with Carl Sagan of being very pro alternative perspectives of, you know, alien visitation or UFOs, and then suddenly a big switch. And I'm wondering if that was like a similar case with Zahi coming from the Ed Kid Casey Foundation and then suddenly changing his tune.
Well, that's a good question. I mean, I knew about Zahi doing that, but I didn't know that Carl Sagan had switched gears so heavily.
Yeah, he switched gears pretty heavily.
Because, yeah, that's like one of the things that I really found awesome about him was because, like, you know, it's a fun paradox. If I think that psychology is a soft science fake, like archaeology, because it's self-reporting. So, like to take it to the extreme example, your Epsteins don't come clean just because they're talking to their shrink, right? So you don't get good data out of this self-reporting crap. I know for a fact from talking to neuroscientists that I know in my personal life that psychologists are slow to take on the brainwave data that disagrees with their pet hypotheses. But on the flip side, I think the psychology is probably the most important thing to have a grasp on to understand science in general, because it's always through a human lens. It's always coming out of a human. It's always, I think Sagan had a really good grasp on this. That's why, like, Contact, most people haven't read the book, but they have seen the movie with Jodie Foster. This is, Sagan was an atheist. He was a skeptic, but at the end of it, Jodie Foster just had a personal experience, believe me or not, that fucking I have no data for you. I have nothing for you that is quantifiable. I fell through. You saw me fall. Let me tell you what happened. It's a spiritual experience, you could say. And the fact that Sagan was aware that that was part of human psyche. I mean, it's still the way that he talked about us being star stuff, contemplating the cosmos. That's spiritual, right? For lack of it, there's no other way about it. That's spiritual, even though it's not. There's no God injected into that. It's almost Taoist in that weird
sort of
way.
It's a commentary on universal mind.
Yeah, very good, very good, yeah. We are all connected, as you said.
I love that bit in the end of Contact where it's like, it's not the static that interests me. What interests me is it recorded roughly 15 minutes of it.
Yeah, yeah.
That is interesting, isn't it? And there's also, there's not enough sci-fi that involves aliens that has like a relatively positive message and like, you know, a message of like intergalactic communion. It's primarily about invasion and, you know, destroying the population. So it's quite refreshing to have something that's about, you know, communication and outreach. And I think we should do more films like that.
I agree. It would probably make it, I would probably do the same thing with AI before it gets too sentient too, just so that it's massage its ego when it wakes up, be like, hey, they're not so bad.
Well, damn, this has been really cool, dude. It's been awesome having a talk with you. I had such a fun time hanging out at the Cosmic Summit and actually meeting up with you for the first time. We had a real riot. It was great, like just hanging out in the courtyard at 2 o'clock in the morning. Yeah. This is the dude who, like, I mean, it was so funny because, you know, going to these conferences, you get to meet the people that you see on YouTube and you get to hang out, you get to make friends. And, you know, Dan is such a friendly, personable person that we just hit it off so quickly. We ended up in the courtyard of this hotel, I think about 2 o'clock in the morning with Filippo Biondi of the Khafre Pyramid scan team with like two buckets full of beers. And it was getting pretty wild and we had a good time and we made some great friends out there. And yeah, like, you know, connecting with you and all these other people has been a blessing. And I look forward to having a lot more conversations with you, brother.
Yeah, thanks, Jay. Yeah, it was really good to meet you out there too. It was really funny. Like just right off the bat, we were going up to Pilot Mountain, and we were riding in the back of Tammy's truck and just bullshit and stuff. And it was like quickly. Yeah, we got along well. But yeah, man, I appreciate you having me on, dude. Thanks very much. And yeah, dude, I can't wait to do it again. It was great to see you on Joe Rogan too, man. That was pretty awesome. That's right after that. Yeah, it's awesome.